Welcome to the Science, Microbes, and Health podcast, covering emerging topics and challenges in the fields of probiotics, prebiotics, synbiotics, postbiotics, and fermented foods. This is the podcast of the International Scientific Association for Probiotics and Prebiotics, known as ISAP, a nonprofit scientific organization dedicated to advancing the science of these fields. Check us out at www.isapscience.org. I'm Dr. Mary Helen Sanders, ISAP's Executive Science Officer. I hope you enjoy this episode with your host from the ISAP Board of Directors, Professor Dan Tancredi.
Hello, everybody. My name is Daniel Tancredi, and we're pleased today to welcome Carlos Gomez-Gallego from the University of Eastern Finland to talk about a very interesting subject, genetic modified microorganisms for health. Carlos, can you start by telling us a little bit of your very interesting background, your training, and the kind of work you've been doing?
Yes, of course. Thank you, first of all, for inviting me. Currently, I'm senior researcher at the University of Eastern Finland, and I'm working in the food research group. I was studying in Spain. My bachelor background is related with biology and food science technology. From my thesis and during my postdoc, I have been always interested in the use of bioactive compounds, mostly related with food or supplements, and their impact on health and intestinal microbiota.
Carlos, can you tell us what are genetically engineered microorganisms?
They are microorganisms that has been modified using genetic engineering to introduce genes that are modifying genes that confer them abilities that they are not in the natural organism.
And do they sometimes take away adverse abilities? The genetic modification, do they sometimes not just confer positive traits, but take away negative traits?
Yeah, the genetic modification can be in any of the directions. For example, it can be used to delete some function, but also you can introduce novel genes that they were not in the original microorganisms and confer them different abilities.
You can modify the microorganism, of course, through genetic modification to do things that before haven't been done.
Yeah, that is the main novelty of the modification of the different microorganisms by using different tools from the genetic engineering. So we can modify them, for example, to produce some therapeutic compounds. When we administer the organisms, they can continue to deliver these therapeutics, but also potentially they can be modified to consume or increase the degradation of toxins or harmful compounds. So the potential is really, really big.
Yeah, I can see that. And I understand that part of the attraction is that you're able to have sort of continuous delivery and it could be somewhat more targeted than systemic.
The delivery can be continuous also in the specific location. In our case, like for example, that we were targeting hormones that are underexpressed in the gastrointestinal tract. If we had provide one bacteria that in the local point can produce this hormone, we, for example, can avoid the high oral dose of these hormones, or for example, we can avoid that when we administer this hormone or the therapy orally, but they can be like losses during the gastrointestinal tract, or for example, interaction with other compounds or food components that can modify the therapeutic and reduce the activity. So the advantage is that in the localized area, we can produce the therapeutic that we want.
So a lot of the work you do is actually centered on disease, and especially like the interplay between metabolic and immunological mechanisms. Can you talk to us about the potential promise of genetically modified microorganisms in that particular niche?
Yes. Well, nowadays there is several diseases that has complex interaction between metabolism and immune system, of course, involving also the intestinal microbiota. And some of the diseases still nowadays, they don't have like an approved or validated therapy. In our case, the last 4 years, I have been involved in a project related with the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease in collaboration between different groups here at the UEF and also with other universities in Europe. We have been studying like novel microbial therapies for the potential treatment of the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. In concrete, we were studying or checking different genetically modified E. coli micelle to produce hormones that usually are underregulated or underexpressed during the development of NAFL, and evaluating in animal models if these genetically modified bacteria producing these hormones can help in the treatment of this disease. In particular, we have been evaluating the impact in the intestinal microbiota, but also checking different aspects of histology and physiological change, and also combining transcriptomics and metabolomics approaches to see the change that these therapies may have.
Let's talk a little bit about the hormones. I think some of our listeners may not appreciate that the bacteria actually produce a lot of hormones similar to what the amount that might be produced in other mechanisms. Can you talk about some of the ways, some of the hormones that are produced by the bacteria and why it may be possible to enhance that production through genetic modification?
Yes, well, in that case, modified bacteria we were testing, they were producing hormones that normally they are not produced for this bacteria. So we were introducing plasmid to produce the analogs of the human hormones.
Oh, wow. That's very interesting. Did that work? Was that successful?
Yeah, well, we were testing different of them, but one E. coli micelle modified to produce aldafermin, that is one analog of the FGF19 in humans that usually is underregulated during the non-alcoholic fatty liver disease. So in that case, the modified E. coli micelle was able to produce the hormone constitutively. And when we were testing in the ORMAX model, we observed that compared with the different groups and the other controls, it was improving the different parameters in liver metabolites plasma.
Well, that's very interesting. So yeah, you're actually exploiting mechanisms that haven't really ever been exploitable through other pharmacological approaches then. Can you talk about what are the things you worry about? Like what makes this difficult? I know some listeners may be worried about side effects. Is that a concern for you, or are you mostly worried about accuracy and getting the thing to actually sustain the work?
Yeah, I think that we have to consider both. I think that when we think in the potential of use genetically modified, because at the end they are genetically modified organisms, we have to consider all the ethical aspects, but also all the risks when we are modifying the organisms. Of course, when we are thinking about to use these microorganisms for potential therapies in the case of diseases that doesn't have any other alternative, So we have to consider the risk-benefit balance. But yeah, efficacy is important, but also the safety and the side effect. I think that from the patient's point of view or the general public point of view, the ethical concepts can be important and also the acceptance. We have the examples, the use of genetically modified organisms for food production, and they have high consent between the consumer. But maybe in the case of the therapeutic approach, if we can ensure that these products are safe, the risks are low, it can be better accepted by the general public.
How about the sort of technologies you use that can be used to sort of overcome the challenges of the genetically engineered microorganism-based therapies? Like what kind of things can be done to improve the shelf life and improve the biosafety? Are there technologies that you're pursuing or that you hope to see others pursue in the near future?
Well, in our case, the technology of the modification of the microorganisms was done by the research group of the Professor Morten Sommer in the Technical University of Denmark. In our group, we were developing the animal model for non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, testing the bacteria. I think that, for example, one way to increase the efficacy and safety is to, when you modify the bacteria, you can introduce sensors that produce the therapeutic in response to different stimuli. So, for example, it can be the sensor can react to proteins in the environment or different compounds to the environment and produce the therapeutic system during these conditions. Also, it's important for safety users to ensure that the modified bacteria has a control use, so it cannot spread outside the human body and like long life, but also they can be modified to avoid the original transmission of genes in one bacteria or another. So this aspect can be carefully or should be carefully considered to ensure the safety of the products and the control of the therapy.
It's exciting because I can see that work potentially being used even with more traditional small molecule pharmacologics. Like if you can develop sensors with the microorganism, that could be potentially teamed up with better targeted drug delivery.
We haven't worked with any of them, but no. I have read that there are sensors that can respond to the pH, the temperature, and also there has been some attempts, I don't know if they are working or not nowadays, to, for example, to respond to the coronavirus proteins that are produced by other microorganisms. For example, potentially you can produce some antimicrobials when the potential pathogenic bacteria are in a high concentration or are having particular activity.
Do we have any marketing approval on any of the genetically modified microorganism approaches?
No, there is none approved one. It has been some attempts, like for example, there is some clinical trials in phase one and phase two, to my knowledge, in humans. For example, I'm not 100% sure, but some of them has been using like E. coli cell, other has been using lactobacillus, but also I think that has been attempts or in this clinical trials to use some Salmonella and Listeria that has been genetically modified to produce this therapeutic. But yeah, to my knowledge, that they are only in phase one and phase two. We have been just testing in animal models, so we are really far from that yet.
Okay. So there's still a lot of basic science that needs to be done, it sounds like.
Yeah. And also part of the problem is that we know, like for example, in E. coli diesel, probably E. coli in general is one of the microorganisms that has been more studied, and also the molecular genetic tools to modify them, probably they has been the more studied. The same with the case of the lactobacillus. They are bacteria that we really know well how they work, and how we can modify their genomes. But in the case of the therapeutics point of view, usually we have limitations that we don't know exactly the mechanism behind this disease interaction. Like it can affect like several organs, and it can be a really complex interplay between metabolites, immune system, different organ systems. So part of the limitations from my point of view is that we don't know sometimes these complex diseases. So design therapies for that is part of the problem, not as much to modify the microorganism. I think that for that, we are more advanced in the tools.
Yeah, it seems like it could be a challenge too, to figure out if something is absolutely safe, because the organisms that you study may not have the particular genetic or transcriptomic features that, when combined with the genetically modified microorganism, could express harm in another organ. But then when you release it to the public, you would find that there are some people with unusual combinations.
Yeah, I think that is a good point, and I agree that, for example, we are working in a really controlled environment, but I think that is a big concern, and then when we start to use it, yeah, the interaction of these genetically modified microorganisms with the other microorganisms, but also all the genetic background and the pattern that is getting the therapy can be quite complex, and we don't know what can happen after.
I would imagine in your line of work, you have to encounter a lot of what I would call political resistance, or folks resisting anything that's genetically modified. They have concerns about it. Have you felt a certain amount of resistance to the kind of work you're doing based on those kind of concerns?
I think that from the ethical point of view, it's not as much, for example, the genetically modified microorganisms, because that is the purpose is to treat a disease. But for example, it can be more resistance from the public to the use of animal models. But for example, in that case, that we have to prove the efficacy, but also the safety is something that we cannot avoid.
Yeah, it's a challenge. Are there things that can be done, do you feel like, for the prevention of disease, or is it almost always the treatment of disease?
Yeah, I think that in that case, it depends, because if you can prevent the disease by other mechanisms, you have to prioritize instead of use, like, for example, a genetically modified organism. In our case that we are talking about non-alcoholic fatty liver disease, I think that, for example, for prevention, we should still encourage like lifestyle modification, including like improving of the diet, increased physical activity. And if with these traditional preventive methods still may have the disease, in that case, you can go for the advanced. But in the risk-benefit balance, if you have an alternative, I will prioritize the alternatives over the use of the genetically modified microorganisms.
Okay.
But that's my personal opinion.
Let me conclude by sort of changing the subject. I find people that do the kind of work that you do, Carlos, to be very fascinating in that you get to work with a lot of different disciplines, you know, people with expertise. Can you talk a little bit about your thoughts on how to develop more people like you?
I think that it was coming from that. In my case, I think that it's not normal because I have two very different university degrees. Like my first university degree, that when I did it in Spain, it was like 5 years university degree, was biology. And also my orientation was like biomedical biology. But after that, I decided that, okay, it's nice, I like it, but I also like food science. So I decided to make another university degree in food science. And after that, I was combining both respective, like food science and nutrition, but also the biomedical biology point of view. But I think that if people like different disciplines, different studies, yes, they can do it. But and part of my background is that I have like different studies, but also have been working in different places. So I have been making my PhD in food science and nutrition, but having research states, being people working in probiotics, microbiota, but also in food analysis. And I think that my postdoc at the University of Turku and also later here at the University of Eastern Finland has been from probiotic field and now in more food science and nutrition institute. So moving a little from different departments and different backgrounds probably has given me this multidisciplinary expertise. But at the end, I would recommend people that do whatever they like more and try to enjoy while they are doing it.
Well, it's fascinating to see the kind of work you're doing. And I wish your field lots of success, because it seems like it's the possibility of, you know, more accurate targeted therapy and to address diseases that right now we don't have the kind of solutions that we need for them. So,
thank you. Thank you so much. Yes, let's hope that we have success now. We have been working for 4 years on that. And now we are in the moment publish the results, and that some of them are really fascinating. I hope that the rest of the scientific community find them also interesting, and we can progress on that in the future.
For sure. Thanks so much, Carlos.
Thank you so much.